Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week, we bring you the best news, views, and interviews with the CEOs, founders, leaders, clinicians, investors, sometimes journalists that are changing the face of healthcare in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners know, I am a CEO and founder of a health tech venture myself, which is called PocDoc. PocDoc has revolutionized how cardiovascular screening is done with our Healthy Heart Check. So the Healthy Heart Check does in 9 minutes what otherwise might take 2 or 3 appointments if you went to your doctors. It delivers the equivalent of an NHS health check in just 9 minutes. So if you're interested in finding out any more about that, it's on sale in all of the major high street pharmacies, or you can go to pocdoc.co to find out more information. Thank you, as ever, to PocDoc for all of the show support. Now, thank you also, as I say at the start of every show, thank you if you're listening live on UK Health Radio. We love UK Health Radio. It's an incredible station. Johan and Raffaella and the team do an amazing job. Check out all of the other presenters. There's tons of awesome content. And all of the shows, not just ours, are on the UK Health Radio channel on Spotify and the other podcast channels. Welcome if you are listening on demand on any of the podcast channels, either directly through the Health Tech Hour channel or through the UK Health Radio channel. It's great to have you here. We get downloads now from people in over 50 countries a month, which is kind of insane. But you know, that's what growth looks like, I guess. And you keep showing up and keep downloading, so we must be doing something right. But thank you very much for listening. If you're watching us on YouTube or on my Instagram channel, which is at Steve Roost, it's great to see you, and thanks for stopping by. Last week's show was a deep dive into community pharmacy. So community pharmacy, there's 1.6 million people that go to a community pharmacy every day in the UK. Community pharmacy delivers over 40% of all flu jabs in the UK. And we had the chair, Nick Kay, of the National Pharmacy Association, on, who is locked in a fight with the UK government about increasing the amount of money that pharmacies get, because they're asked to do more for less money, basically. So if you're interested in community pharmacy and you want to kind of get a bit of your rant on, then I can recommend that show. But on to today's show. I've been looking forward to getting these two guests on for a while, since we actually had breakfast, I think probably like 6 months ago. And I just got straight off a flight and was jacked up full of caffeine. So it was good. It's great to get these guys on. I've got the two founders of of a business called Percy Health, which is P-E-R-C-I, Percy Health. And Percy Health is the world's first virtual cancer clinic, and is dedicated, their mission is dedicated to massively improving cancer outcomes. Morgan and Kelly, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great to see you, Steve. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, nice to see you. We were giggling because we were just remembering that breakfast.
Yeah.
You came with a lot of energy considering the long flight.
Yeah, I think it was caffeine. We can blame caffeine. But look, it's great to have you on. So I think just to begin with, I'd love to kind of share with the listeners, because we have a broad church, what is a virtual cancer clinic? Then we can get into the origins of it. But let's just try and get some sort of terminology sorted first.
Yeah, of course. I'm happy to explain that, Steve. I think so. Clearly, what we do not provide virtually is any form of cancer treatment. So no chemotherapy, radiotherapy, surgery. But what we are designed to do is to plug all of the other critical gaps that exist in the cancer care pathway, right from prevention through to treatment support, through to survivorship, to improve outcomes. So in our virtual cancer clinic, patients would be assessed, triaged, put onto either digital management pathways or given access to a really large team of multidisciplinary cancer professionals who can support them with, navigating the cancer treatment that they're receiving or rehabilitating afterwards. So this would include specialist cancer nurses, dietitians, physiotherapists, psychologists, genetics counselors, a really broad multidisciplinary team who are all cancer expert who can support patients throughout their cancer pathway.
Okay, and how did you guys come about? What are the origins of all of this? Where did this all come from? Because I'm guessing it didn't quite start as this all singing, all dancing. There must have been like a root in, like an insight or an experience or something that kind of triggered the whole thing.
Yeah, of course. So my background, I've worked in cancer care now for 17 years, initially as a specialist cancer dietitian, so working mostly with head and neck cancer patients throughout their radiotherapy, and then as moved on to become a head of therapy. So you can start to see where Percy comes from. So as a head of therapies within large NHS cancer centres, so really growing and managing teams of allied health professionals, so dietitians, physios, psychologists within NHS cancer hospitals, and then realizing that there's simply not enough of us to support the growing number of cancer patients coming through those NHS facilities. I moved across to the private sector, so I've also been an operator. I've managed as a chief operating officer a group of private cancer hospitals, and again saw exactly the same gaps in care in both that we were witnessing in the NHS in the private system as well, that we typically do a really good job of supporting patients during their treatment. If you look at like national cancer patient experience surveys, people report that they feel pretty well supported during their treatment. But then for a growing number of people, there's this kind of universal conversation that happens at the end of treatment where your oncologist or your surgeon will say, hopefully, everything's gone really well. I'll see you again in 12 months' time. And at that point, you are just pushed back out really into the wild with a lack of access to healthcare and often back to your GP, who may or may not know anything about the treatment that you've had and the cancer that you have and the long-term side effects. So that was the concept behind Percy, was how could we do better to provide specialized healthcare to cancer survivors, people who are living with and beyond a diagnosis. And we founded it 4.5 years ago. I don't think I would have, even though I had the idea around it, I would never have started the business if I hadn't met Morgan. Morgan's background is totally different, so I'll let Morgan explain her background and I guess her focus at Percy as well.
Yeah, I, as Kelly said, I'm not from a clinical background at all. That's not my experience. I started in digital, so my career has been in digital, and I was a management consultant for many years. So apologies for that.
Why are you apologizing? I always find it funny that management consultants apologize for that stuff. You got to own it. Like, it's a
I
great
know, but
background.
everyone hates them.
No, come on. What are you talking about? No.
Oh, thank
Anyway,
you. Anyway. Anyway, I didn't stay in it for long. No, it is a great, you're right. It's a really good pedigree, right? You learn lots about business and strategy and all that good stuff. But really, I was focused on helping businesses to use digital and understand digital in a way that they could improve customer experiences and also look at scaling efficiencies. And revenue essentially. But then I went into direct consumer marketing. Digital became huge in the scene in communications, and digital marketing was the newest thing. Jumped into that, and I was the I headed up marketing for the global retailer ASOS. So really focused on how we acquire customers, branding, but also communications and the customer experience. And then I worked in New York for a few years. So my mum's American, so I have dual citizenship, and I was the digital director of CBS Television. And that was, again, a role which was really focused on teaching people about digital and how they could use digital to improve the customer experience. And Kelly and I, we got introduced by accident. So we weren't friends. We started working at another startup, and I don't know if we've got time to talk about the reasons why we were both there, but for very different reasons. But we now reflect and say, actually, the reason was to meet each other.
Right.
And Kelly kind of took me for a coffee. I always remember it. It was quite funny. She was the chief operating officer. I was the chief marketing officer. It was an online retailer, by the way. And she took me to coffee and said, like, this isn't my thing. I've got another idea.
Yeah.
And then she pulled out a PowerPoint presentation in the middle of the coffee shop
Nice.
and said, there's this huge gap. You know, I think there's loads we could do with digital. And essentially, I had got to a point in my career where I was definitely looking for greater meaning and impact. And Kelly kind of, well, said, here's your
Here's
impact,
good. Here's a
basically.
good. Yeah, here's a good option.
Yeah.
So, when you first heard the idea, like, what did it sound like, and how different is it
Oh,
now from what the one that you first kind of heard?
really, that is such a good question
It's not my
because,
first. Not
oh
my first rodeo. Do you know
no,
what I mean?
you've been there, done that.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, is it different?
Okay.
It's so different. So the thing that I got really excited about, so why I love digital, and we could spend a whole hour on this because of AI and all the innovations that are happening today, which is incredible. It's amazing. But what I really enjoy is about how it can, I guess, provide access, greater access, decrease inequalities. That's how I saw it when I first started. There's lots of ways it doesn't do that. But I was really excited about this idea that there was this group of people that weren't getting access to care and how digital could play a role in increasing better care and better access. And actually, the original idea was, I don't know, this is going to sound terrible. Kelly might, I don't know, I'm looking
It
at
was a
her.
marketplace.
Well,
Okay.
I was going to say the Amazon of cancer, which
Oh.
sounds
No.
horrific.
Well, yeah, I'm not, I wouldn't say it sounds horrific, but I think there's good reasons why you probably didn't go with that one.
Yeah, exactly. It
So
didn't
it was going to
last
be a,
long.
so it was going to be like a marketplace, was it, or originally?
Yeah. And the whole business model and all of our first rounds of investment were raised off the back of it being a marketplace. So the problem we were solving is that you've got, not huge communities, but you've certainly got a large number of cancer specialist practitioners, nutritionists, physiotherapists, psychologists, but patients don't know how to access them outside of the NHS setting. And if you, even in the private sector, you're typically going to generalist physios, for example, high street physios and so on. You don't have specialist cancer knowledge. So we were going to connect people living with and beyond cancer with vetted, qualified healthcare professionals. And the challenge that we, well, the key learning, which is obvious in hindsight, is that although the concept landed really well, our members, so we call our patients members, our members needed heavy hand-holding and curation to understand what they needed. They knew exactly what symptoms they were experiencing, but they wouldn't know which type of healthcare professional was most suitable to support them. And increasingly, they need a team, not just one person. So how do you build that team? So we found ourselves then curating those care teams for the individual based on their needs, and then slowly, our model has evolved to become like we are a healthcare provider. We deliver, pathways, like evidence-based pathways of care. Every person meets with a nurse. There is a thorough assessment of, using validated tools. And then that nurse will curate a bespoke care team for that individual who can support them with their rehabilitation goals.
Yeah, that's a lot more curated, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Definitely.
And of course, the other huge advantage, which again, we didn't think about at the start, but it's so important, is like it's very difficult to measure outcomes, clinical outcomes in a marketplace model because everybody is accessing a different amount of care
Yeah,
at
they're
different
self-serving as
locations.
well. They're just doing it
Yeah.
themselves. And so, like, if you go back a second to your experience in the NHS around cancer, and I'm sure lots of people listening have experienced cancer within the NHS, cancer care in the NHS, either directly or a friend, family member. So, but just what is that like? And because Morgan, you mentioned this gap, and Kelly, you mentioned the gap. So, what is the average cancer care pathway like for somebody? I know it will differ depending on age, depending on type of cancer, depending on all kinds of different things, but just if we can generalize, that'd be helpful. And then what was the gap? What is the gap within the NHS? And let's noodle around on that for a bit.
Yeah, I think the best way to think about cancer, obviously, my experience when I was a clinician working in the NHS was that I was involved in a patient's team when they were having active cancer treatment. So they're having daily radiotherapy or they're coming to the hospital for chemotherapy. But actually, the cancer pathway is much longer than that. So if we take it through the pathway kind of step by step, I can talk about the gaps at each stage. So we know that 40% of cancers are preventable. I think this is pretty common knowledge now through kind of lifestyle modification, but there is a lack of kind of preventative or risk reduction initiatives in the community setting. I know obviously with the new NHS plan, there is a hope that there will be some movement towards preventative care, but that's not being seen today. And then that kind of lack of preventative support, particularly for groups which are harder to reach, like different communities of geography or identity, that lack of preventative support means that we're seeing increased incidence of cancer. And this is exacerbated by poor screening attendance. So I think one of the things that the NHS can do relatively well is that they've seen great success from some of their cancer screening programs, the more recent like targeted lung health check program. Really successful in identifying lung cancer at the
The
earliest
like
stages.
the bowel cancer screening one as well has got like 68% uptake.
Really successful, exactly. But there are 35% of NHS screening appointments which are offered are actually not attended, so they are missed. So, are there some simple interventions that we can do to just get people to take up your NHS screening, that you're eligible for, before we then have to consider other private screening options. So there is a bit of a gap in attendance for screening, and again, thinking about marginalised communities and how they access. And then, let's say you have had a screening appointment and you are diagnosed. You have had a screening appointment. There's worrying concerns. There's issues with diagnosis. You've got to get to your GP. Not all GPs are appropriately trained. We see late diagnoses quite often. So 41% of patients in the UK are diagnosed at a late stage three or stage four cancer. And then once people are diagnosed, there can often be a really long wait to start treatment. So over 62 days. And can you imagine, you've got a cancer diagnosis and you're waiting over 2 months to get going with that treatment plan, like the level of anxiety there. We
Well, let
should, oh yes,
go on,
sorry.
carry no, carry on.
Last one is that we should be providing during that moment prehabilitation, like optimizing somebody's physical and psychological status to get them ready and prepare for that treatment and ensure they get the optimal outcomes from that treatment. But again, prehabilitation is not universal across the NHS. And then, of course, gaps in care after treatment with rehabilitation,
Okay, and
return to
with
work.
the 41% of people that are diagnosed at stage three or stage four, what do you think the contributing factors are to that diagnosis, and what could be done? Because some cancers present differently, don't they, over different timelines, and it's, that the like for example, pancreatic, that's harder to diagnose at stage one or stage two because there aren't may not be any symptoms, for example, and it's not visible. But what do you think are the things that contribute to that 41%?
So I think there's obviously people presenting late. So regardless of cancer type, we know that people often present late. There's a fear of going to your GP with worrying symptoms and perhaps a lack of awareness. But then we also know that 55% of cancer deaths come from rare or less common cancers. So, that's one of the challenges. If you're a GP, the symptoms of cancer are very broad and diverse. It could be anything from fatigue to weight loss to loss of appetite to changes in bowel habits.
Yeah,
It's
stomach
really
pain, which could be all kinds of different things.
That's the thing. And so, from a GP's perspective, and they are typically the person who's then referring you into the right diagnostic pathway, it's really, really
Have
challenging.
you, yeah. Have you heard this thing just as on that? Because it sounds to me like how I mean, what percentage of cancer diagnoses go through the GP? Like 90 plus percent? Like I'm guessing, right? So, but this guy Nick Kay was on last week, and he said that in Devon and Cornwall, they have been doing for the last 2 years at a trial in community pharmacies where the community pharmacist can refer you directly into the cancer clinic at the hospital. Have you heard about that? Or is that news to
But
you?
that, yeah, like rapid access path, like
Yeah.
and you can do self-referral diagnostic pathways now.
Okay.
That kind of innovation is really, I think, really exciting. Like cut that step out for people with worrying symptoms
Yeah.
and get them into a diagnostic pathway quickly.
Okay. And then on this thing around the 62 days to start treatment, what are the things that contribute to that? Because I completely agree. I'm sure lots of people listening would agree, and maybe some people have gone through that, that 62 days is like unbelievably stressful and traumatic.
Yeah. And sometimes it's necessary, you know, so sometimes it's just purely that there's a lack of capacity in the system, right? And so you're waiting on things like your scans or your pathology or whatever is needed for the clinician to make the decision around the right treatment for you. And sometimes the delay is needed because you need, like maybe you need a second opinion or you need other information, but more often than not, it's capacity issues. And where we lack capacity is in some of our like really basic like imaging equipment, you know, just trying to access scans and other tests required for doctors to make the decision about your treatment plan.
Okay. Well, we're going to go for our first commercial break now, and then after the break, I want to jump into a little bit like what is the experience of someone using Percy? Like, how do they find it? What do they do? Like, how does it kind of overlap with some of those issues that we just talked about? Just to try and dig into it a little bit from the patient perspective, because I mean, look, it's pretty clear that there's real like emotional trauma as well as operational blocks and hurdles and all kinds of other things that are creating problems here for patients. So let's jump into that. So we'll be right back after 2 minutes with my guests today, Morgan and Kelly, the co-founders of Percy Health, which is on a mission to massively improve cancer outcomes. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And my guests today, Morgan and Kelly, the co-founders of Percy Health, which is the world's first virtual cancer clinic, which aims to massively improve cancer outcomes. So before the break, we were kind of going through like some of the issues around, particularly around the NHS, around cancer care, and patient experience. And so, like, how does Percy, or how, taking those insights, how did you use those insights into what you developed at Percy?
Well, I think the first thing to go back to is we mentioned how it's radically changed since we first launched. And I think the importance of that is that we needed to get something live and we needed to test it. So we're really, really passionate about, I'm sure you hear this from lots of people that you get on because this is the reason why we get out of bed every day. We're really passionate about the patient experience and the patient being the center of everything that we do. And so we did lots of interviews, like the patient is embedded into product feedback. You know, we are constantly checking the experience with them. But at the start, we did in-depth interviews and then we got it live. They used it and the behavior was very different. So there's that, you know, the data that you get, what people say and how they behave, you know, we've all been caught by that before we know it theoretically. So lots of testing and in lots of different formats. And so, actually, it was really important to get something live and get them using it and use that data in order to inform the direction of travel. Like, how do we create something that has real impact and that people want to engage with? And to say that's an evolution, it's changing all the time. But what we've done, and what I guess I think we're both really excited about, is this combination of deep clinical expertise within cancer, so being specialists within our fields, but also this breadth of digital experience expertise. And really, I guess we feel that that gives us a different perspective. So we're approaching this from a completely unique way. We're not a clinician on our own. We're not a non-clinician because something that Kelly and I talk about constantly is that we don't think you can build a digital business or a clinical business without clinical expertise at the forefront of it. And you're hearing that from Kelly's expertise, that hand-on knowledge and depth. But actually having the combination of both makes something really unique and different. And so I think Kelly mentioned this, but the experience is you get access to Percy via a virtual clinic. It's all online. The way people access it is different. At the moment, we are partnering with insurers because that gives us a route to as many members as possible. And the way we think about it is it's free at point of usage because we do this through group insurers. So the employer is paying. We also partner with charities, and we also have direct self-pay options. But really, where the bulk of our usage comes from is from our insurance, health insurance, and risk insurance partnerships. You get access to a virtual clinic. Everything we do, like we say, is incredibly personalized and very much multi-channel. So what you do is you would create an account, you would get asked some specific questions, and then that would inform your nurse clinic. So the first clinic that happens is using information and data that we've gathered from the individual. So it really makes the best use of that time, and makes it very informative. And then you get your personalized care plan, and that is again created by your cancer nurse. Within that plan, it has the recommended pathway based on your specific symptoms and your unique needs, and then a curated, personalized, I keep on saying personalized, but curated team, because we've got this wealth and breadth of these incredible clinicians that are cancer experts. And I guess it's kind of like this pick and mix, which is amazing that you can curate this team.
What do you find? Is there any like trend data around like who accesses the platform? Like, do they access it? Like, are these people in certain stages of cancer? Like, do they want to are more services more popular than others? Like, what are the things? What are the insights that you've gathered? Like, is it more nutrition or mental health, or what is it that people are really looking to access? Because that I guess that probably indicates what they're most worried about or where they have the highest degree of need.
Yes, exactly right, Steve. And that data is really valuable to us as a business because we can use that insight to then further develop our services, to better meet those needs. But also we share that insight with our partners, our insurance partners, and hopefully in the future NHS partners who are also needing to understand what that gap in care looks like. So the data that we have, we recently published an impact report which covers, all of the information you just discussed, but we know that we skew heavily towards women. So we have about 65% of our users are women. And again, within that cohort, we skew heavily towards breast cancer. I think that is because of the route to market, because as Morgan said,
That's
we're
what I was going to
selling
say.
to group insurance through group insurance policies, which are employer funded. So this is a working age group, and breast cancer is more common in working age groups. So we skew towards women and we skew towards breast cancer, but we have seen and looked after members from like almost every type of cancer, and almost every age, right from 18 through to 81, I think is our oldest member. Our average age is about 45. So again, it's a younger cancer population than is typical. And that's part of our uniqueness, actually, and something we want to retain is we are building services for working age people with cancer because there's a growing number of working age people with cancer and they have very different needs. We've got a lot of data around that. In terms of the services which are accessed, probably unsurprisingly, 70% of people will access some form of psychological support. Cancer and mental health are intrinsically linked. We know that rates of depressive disorders are 3 times higher in people living with and beyond cancer than in a normal population. There's a higher risk of, long-term psychological illness and also higher rates, sadly, of suicide in that group. So I think it goes without saying that most people require some form of psychological support, and we have various levels of psychological support that we provide. So 70%. And then the other core services are physiotherapy and dietitians. So
Okay.
kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Your exercise, diet, and then mental health.
And how on the nutrition side of things, I'm not going to try and get you into this debate, but a few weeks ago we did a cancer special with a friend of mine who was a stage four pancreatic cancer. Well, he was diagnosed 2 years ago, given 3 to 6 months to live. So thankfully, he's still with us. And a lady called Jay McClellan, who wrote the book on how, which is called How to Starve Cancer, which I think she should have titled differently because it wasn't actually about how to starve cancer. It was like, do chemo, do radio, do surgery, but here's some other nutritional things that you can look at. I think she was going for a bit of a controversy, which may have backfired. But in the nutrition space, to be to that, like, how do you make sure, or what's your view on what you're aligning yourself to in terms of, because some of the guidance within the NHS is sort of vanilla enough to not be actually that helpful sometimes. But obviously there's a whole bunch of stuff out there, some of which is completely crackers. So where do you, you know, where do you guys kind of, how do you make sure that you're on track, so to speak?
And this from the beginning of Percy, even when we were thinking about this marketplace model, this has been core to kind of all of the decisions that we make. Like, it's very important to us that we are rooted in clinical guidelines and the evidence base. Obviously, I haven't been a practicing clinician for a long time, but I was a specialist oncology dietitian. And it is difficult because you are treading this kind of grey area between what you might find in a charity information leaflet about diet and cancer, or an NHS leaflet about any form of diet, which is so generic that
Yes,
it's hard
exactly.
to be useful. It's food is so personalized, like it's related to our financial circumstances, our cultural background, our likes and dislikes, and then if you have cancer, your symptoms and your side effects and so on. So it has to be highly personalized. But if you meet a specialist cancer trained dietitian, the level of personalized advice that they would be giving you would be incredibly tailored. It would be looking at the type of cancer you have, if there were any metastases, what treatment you're having, the expected side effects, what you're experiencing today, what you're likely to experience in the future, your social circumstances, and you would receive a diet plan that is unique to you. And that's where we sit. So we are only using dietitians. That is a registered title. You have to be, have undergone a certain amount of training. We only use those that have at least 3 years of direct cancer care experience working within the NHS centres, and they are obviously then, bound by their professional body regulations to make sure that any evidence they provide is grounded in, good quality clinical evidence. Now, there will still be questions that we receive where, could be things like the ketogenic diet or the relationship between sugar and cancer and so on.
Yeah, like the Warburg effect and all that stuff.
Absolutely. And the challenge with, and this is not specific to cancer, but the challenge with all nutritional evidence is that it's very difficult to do randomized controlled trials around the impact of diet. Like, the impact of nutrition happens to us over a period of 25, 30, 40 plus years, and what we eat on a day-to-day basis changes, what we eat from year to year changes. So you're typically looking at population studies, epidemiological studies. The evidence base is naturally more difficult to interpret. So I think, my recommendation is you speak with a specialist cancer qualified dietitian, and you check everything with them. The other people to check things with is your pharmacist. So a well-trained oncology pharmacist, going back to the role of pharmacists in the community. So there will be lots of drug nutrient interactions that people aren't aware of. If you're taking multiple medications and then you start taking, either having a very unusual dietary pattern or taking lots of vitamins and mineral supplements, there will be drug nutrient interactions, and a well-trained pharmacist would be able to advise you on that as well.
Okay, and how does this stuff all play into the mission of improving outcomes? Because I would imagine that an out, well, again, I'm not an oncologist, as anyone listening to the show will know, especially the show that we did with Jane. I'm not an oncologist, but I would imagine that a large amount of the outcome relates to the traditional treatment that you have, chemo, radio, surgery. But that's just an assumption. which isn't necessarily in your scope. So, like, how do you guys view your role in delivering that better outcome?
So this is, we talk about outcomes all day, every day at Percy. And this is a kind of very important topic for me at the moment, that when you look at the research base around cancer treatments, and you know, we're seeing an increasing number of novel therapeutics being released all the time, which is radically improving survival rates, right? It's a great story of human progress. But actually, often the end point of those clinical trials is progression-free survival, right? So you are staying alive and your disease, that cancer status isn't changing. You're not therefore looking at the quality of life of those individuals. So it's survival at all costs. I guess the outcomes that we're interested in at Percy are, we might not be able to necessarily change your survival outcome, right? That's what your cancer treatment plan is doing. That's what your oncologist is focused on. What we're focused on is, like, what are the other outcomes that are really important to you as an individual? So that could be your physical function. Like, I want to be able to pick up my children, or I want to be able to continue working, or I want to be able to go to the shops independently. It's obviously psychological health, right? There's Who wants to survive for an additional 10 years with severe depression, where you
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
looking at that, so we look at the outcomes which are important to the individual over and above survival, so that it's not survival at all costs. However, when you do that, you can also improve those really important clinical outcomes. So by optimizing someone's quality of life, their physical, psychological well-being, you can improve their treatment tolerance. You can support them to tolerate treatment and stay on the medication for longer, which therefore does improve survival outcomes. You can prevent dose discontinuations and interruptions. And really critically, you can lower the risk of a cancer recurrence if you optimize someone's lifestyle after treatment.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that's a brilliant summary, a brilliant pitch. And it kind of aligns with some of the stuff that my friend Russell was talking about a little bit about, like, mentality and aligning things and how to create hope and, how to create positivity. So, like, based on your estimation, for all of these, there's a lot of people out there that when they get cancer, they go off and do all of these crazy, marathons and challenges and all that type of stuff. Like, for every one of those, how many people do you think are suffering with psychological issues and depression and things like that? Like, is it, I'm guessing, like, significantly more that probably are for every sort of one, like, random outlier that climbs Everest?
I think it's different because everybody manages things in a different way, and you could still be climbing Everest and suffering with anxiety or
That's, I mean, I would be pretty anxious at the top of Everest, but that's just me.
So the data suggests that about 75% of people living with and beyond cancer will be experiencing some form of psychological impact. That could be anxiety, it could be low mood, depression, fear of cancer recurrence. So I think for us, like every person living with and beyond cancer that we speak to reports at some point, not always, but at some point throughout the experience, they will, as we all do, have periods where their mental health is impacted and need targeted support around that.
That makes a lot of sense. So
One
that
thing just to
oh yeah, go on,
underline on
Morgan.
that really quickly is the point that it's not one or the other, right? The combination of the treatment plus everything we do vastly improves overall outcomes. So it's about how do we look at this as a whole form of care instead of just isolated elements of care.
I think it makes a lot of sense, and the way that the current NHS system operates is under a huge amount of strain and resource constraint. And there's probably quite a bit, not obviously not maliciously, but just outside of those traditional treatments, like, okay, your chemo's done with now. See you in 12 months, like you said, Kelly. There's a lot of stuff that's falling down through the gaps.
Absolutely.
Right, that was the end of the second part of the show. So we will be back in 2 minutes with the final part of this week's Health Tech Hour with my guests, Kelly and Morgan, who are the co-founders of Percy Health, which is a virtual cancer clinic with the mission of massively improving cancer outcomes. We will be back in 2 minutes.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the last part of this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guests, Kelly and Morgan from Percy Health. So before the break, we got really into the behind the scenes, if you like, of like, it's not just chemo, it's not just radiotherapy, it's not just surgery that impacts cancer outcomes. There's so much more that goes into it, as well as that quality of life of someone living with cancer, whether or not it's in remission, whether or not they believe it's be gone or not. So what are some of the feedback or patient stories that you've had around this? Because it is true, you believe yourselves to be, I'm not trying to call you out on it necessarily, but you're the only people doing this way. Is that still the case broadly?
Yeah. I would stand behind that. Our care model is completely unique.
So I'd love to hear what some of the patients think. What have been some of the stories, any case studies? Be great to hear some of that.
I mean, Morgan has done amazing video testimonials with some key members and has sat in, I think, in those studios when they're being filmed. Do you want to talk about some of those?
Yeah, it's literally the highlight. Like, you've ended on the best part, essentially, is hearing that feedback. And I often talk about when I think with the mix of combinations of skill sets we've got within Percy, I think the clinical team never tire of it, but it was really something new and unique hearing customer or member feedback like this for myself and some of the other members of the team. And I talk about it was a lot better than kind of hearing someone say, oh, thanks for delivering my dress on time. You know, it's a completely different experience. It's incredible. One kind of linking back to some of the stuff we were talking about previously about our outcomes and improving quality of life, one of the things we consistently hear is that those who have treatment, they're very much, you know, thankful, and they say, look, the cancer's being treated, but now I want the person to be treated. I want to be treated. So that is, I think it's something we're quite passionate about. We talk about whole human cancer care and really thinking about the whole instead of individual elements of it. And yeah, we've had fantastic, fantastic feedback. We, like Kelly said, we've captured some of it on video. So incredible that people want to talk and shout about us and share their personal experiences about Percy and cancer, because it is very personal and unique and quite emotional. I was speaking to Kelly about one we did a couple of months ago where there wasn't a dry eye left in the studio, but we see very young, dynamic, enthusiastic people. One specifically that sticks with me called Charlotte, who is a journalist, and she had breast cancer, and she was diagnosed quite young, and she went through her treatment. She talked about the impact of that treatment on her individually and how gruesome and grueling she found it, and then she finished her treatment and all care kind of fell away, and 2 weeks later she went back to work. You know, so we've got this kind of perception of people not working or being a bit older, and she went back to work. And the way she describes Percy is so beautiful. I don't think I'm going to do it justice, but she just talks about how cancer and cancer treatment is kind of, you're on this, really, you're shoved onto a train and you're going really fast and fast and fast. And then the treatment finishes. And she says, you're shoved then onto a plane and you're kind of gliding. Right. And you're like, oh, what happened? And then they say bye and you get pushed out of the plane.
Right.
And she talks about this kind of free falling panic, confusion, everything is just chaotic. And she describes Percy Health as kind of scooping you up and holding you and giving you a soft landing, which we could have I couldn't have come up with that. As much
Pretty
as
good,
I'm in
right?
marketing, it's great. It's absolutely beautiful. But then we have another amazing person called Doug, who's in his 60s, also had breast cancer. And he was just fabulous, like really loved the virtual consultations, loved having a digital platform, like spoke endlessly about that. He had chronic fatigue. He wasn't getting out of bed. He wouldn't hang out with his kids. He wasn't going to work. And he just said, gosh, having a virtual clinic and having experts right there in my room really helped me. And essentially said he loved seeing all the experts, and he says he's cured, which is a really nice,
Oh,
a
that's
lovely
nice.
way of describing it. He said, I don't think I'd be here today if it wasn't for Percy. So yeah,
Oh, wow.
like a huge range of very young, dynamic people, older dynamic people who say the most amazing things and talk. I mean, I'm going to talk about digital and virtual until the cows come home, but really talk about having that accessibly to them and being able to not have to go on a train or travel, and getting quick access to personalized specialist care really made the world of difference.
Wow,
Don't
that is
know.
really powerful.
Yeah, I don't know, Kelly, if there's any that stand out with you. There's so many.
I think there's definitely common themes in the language that people use to describe the impact. So that idea of a soft landing is a common theme that we hear. It's like, I felt like I was falling off a cliff, or I was abandoned, and then I found you, and you kind of supported me to, our goal isn't for people to become dependent on our support. Our goal is to empower people to self-manage cancer as a long-term condition, which in many cases cancer is now a long-term condition. So that idea of a soft landing, and the other theme is that people say, during my treatment, I'm really well supported by my friends and family. After treatment, people quite quickly want to forget, right? They want to celebrate that. I'm glad that's behind us now, and they want to move on. But also, they're not cancer experts, so people then are looking for another form of support. And Percy gives you access to experts who are caring. So they're kind of like your friend, but they're actually trained, right? And they can give you really, good quality advice. That theme comes through really often. One of the cases that sticks out for me, just because it was so unusual, but also so, I just loved hearing about it. So I was like, this is why we created Percy, was that we had a much older gentleman accessing the platform. He was in his early 80s, and he needed a bit of support from our customer success team to like get his account created and log in and meet his nurse. And he didn't fill out, therefore, any of the onboarding. And so the nurse was, going into that consultation a little bit blind as to what he was coming for. And I guess what her feedback was, that she had preconceived notions, that having looked at what his cancer diagnosis was, as what he wanted to talk about. But actually, what he really wanted to talk about was the fact that he'd had to have a small amount of his ear removed surgically, and it was really bothering him socially when he was going out. Wanted to speak with a hair and image advisor for some advice about how he could mask this impact of his surgery. And we have specialist hair and image advisors on the platform as well. So the nurse was like, sure, I'll book you in. And he had some appointments about clothing he could wear and other things he could do to disguise that so that he could continue with his social life. And I just love that, because I'm like, you could never expect it impacts people in such different ways. You can make no assumptions about people need, but our platform is so broad that it really doesn't matter what you're coming with, we will find the right person for you.
I love
Yeah,
that.
that's
You're right,
brilliant.
it's
And like
so different.
I would imagine that under the NHS, like there's no way that guy would have seen an image in whatever you call the specialist.
No,
Right?
no.
Not to bash the NHS, but that's just not in their remit.
No, and it just it would the challenges as well. The appointments are so, and we have a group of 35 oncologists and cancer surgeons that are invested in Percy and support us with our service development. And so this is, coming from them. This is not me making an assumption. The appointments are so short, and really what your oncologist is looking at is your bloods and your scan results and some key symptoms. They're just checking, is the cancer back?
He's looking at your, they're looking at your cancer.
Yeah, exactly. Is the cancer being treated effectively? Or if you're in a sort of longer term follow-up, is there any sign of a recurrence? That's what they're looking for. There's no time in those appointments to talk about the fact that you're finding it hard to go to your bridge club because you're a little bit worried about the impact of your surgery, or other things, that affect Like we hear lots from women that things like menopausal side effects, sexual dysfunction, lack of intimacy, really, really important things if you want to live a kind of healthy, fulfilled life. These conversations are not happening. And we created a space where you can talk about anything you want to,
I
and we
think that's really powerful, really, really powerful. So on the issue on, but while we're sort of talking about this, a bit of a comparison to the NHS, what has been your, 'cause I'm guessing you've had some discussions and things like that. Like where did things stand with them? And because this is a gap for them, right? Like this, I guess it depends whether they're that bothered about the gap, I guess. So what, where, I mean, to the extent that you're willing to share, I'm just curious.
I think definitely people are bothered about the gap, like with goes without saying. And I think there's some amazing work happening across, and so I saw this, 10, 15 years ago even. There's lots of amazing pockets of good practice across the NHS where there are like longer term support programs for people with cancer, where holistic needs assessments are being completed and people are being given personalized care plans, but it is fragmented and it is highly variable. We are partnered with Macmillan Cancer Support. So recently Macmillan invested in Percy Health with the shared objective of looking at how we can activate the NHS and get this type of this level of personalized care into an NHS pathway.
Cool.
Yeah, super exciting. And we're also speaking with a number of the different cancer alliances, again, all of whom are looking at projects. There's a real focus on the personalized care agenda. And so I think we will get there. I think it will be the use of digital to kind of lower the cost of care delivery and expand access is going to be critical to that. There are barriers, of course, like there aren't any well-established reimbursement models for this care. The patients are being seen in primary care,
Yeah, exactly. And that,
the
but that can't come
benefits
out of the
in this.
primary care pot.
No, this is it. And as cancer is being reclassified as a long-term condition,
Is
the
that what's
vast
happening? Is that okay? Interesting.
because of these improvements in survival rate, you're now more likely to survive 10 years or more after a cancer diagnosis than you are to die from it. It's becoming a longer term condition. You're going to see more, and obviously the drugs are changing. There are more oral therapies and injectables. And so you're going to see more cancer care delivered in the community setting. You're going to see more people living for longer with long term effects of a cancer diagnosis and treatment arriving in the primary care setting. And so, how are we equipping GPs, practice nurses, and others to better manage this group in that setting. But the challenge is that the benefits to the system, the financial return on investment, is often felt elsewhere. So it's a, you know,
Yeah, that is the classic NHS conundrum, right? Of the cost and the benefit are not in the same place.
yes, exactly right.
Yeah, that's a
I'm more
that.
confident than I've ever been, though. If you think about, I know we've got maybe an AI ban, but I often talk about us being digitally native, but we're now AI native as a business. And so if it was ever going to happen, using digital to quickly and effectively produce something that's cheap, it feels like now is the time. If you asked us probably a couple of years ago, I couldn't, it would be hard to see a route. But now I'm confident that there is a route as long as we can make the reimbursement models work for us.
Yeah, right. So it's the last minute or two of the show, and I always like to just kind of go to, I asked the people on the show, like, in your experience, obviously you guys have been building this business. Kelly, you went to Morgan with the idea on a piece of paper. Like, what have been, and I'm no doubt there's been all kinds of difficult, stressful, unbelievably frustrating times. So what do you guys either say to each other or say to yourselves that get you through those times or have gotten you through those times that might give someone else who's going through something similar, a bit of an emotional boost?
I mean, something that Morgan says often to me, and which is really basic but also really works, is like, we can do hard things. Like, almost everything you're doing when you're doing something for the first time, or trying to do something differently, is innately hard. And sometimes we get bogged down by that, but actually just reassure, like, you've done hard things before, people have done harder things. We can definitely solve this. It's really simple but very effective.
It's more like a
I like that.
mantra. We can do hard things. We can do hard things. Just keep saying it. We can do hard things.
But I like that. And I kind of have a riff off of that one as well myself, which is the hardest thing you've ever done is always the hardest thing you've ever done. So like you know, it doesn't matter what you're doing, it is always the hardest thing. So, you know, you might as well, like, growth comes through surviving difficult situations.
Yeah, agree.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, look, that's the end of the show, guys.
Thank you, Steve. We really appreciate
Amazing.
it. It's been
Thank you
great.
so much for coming on and telling us all about Percy Health. Where do people go if they want to find out more?
www.percyhealth.com and it's PERCI.
Great. Perfect. Thank you very much for coming on. And thank you to everyone for listening. We will be back again next week with another show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't blame me, love made me crazy. If it doesn't, you ain't doing it right. Lord, save me, my drug is my baby. I'll be using for the rest of my life. I've been breaking hearts a long time and toying with them all.